Canto 3, Chapter 1. Our giant left a tree trunk in his hand, which he made use of as a walking stick. He came at last to Dozoropor, the giant's land, having crossed a moat enclosed by stony walls. At once he roared as loudly as a lion. The mountain and the valley shook with fear. The giants ran out from their abodes, out of the crevices and rocks and moats. They looked about, and they soon spotted Torp, who stood there with a great tree in his hand. They waved at him. "Come closer, don't be shy," the giants called, delighted with their guest. Invincible, the titan Torp climbed up and walked into a house carved from the mountain. An old but sprightly man, the giant's patriarch, received the traveling guest with warmth and show. A carpet was spread upon the floor, and Torque was made to occupy the place of honor. The children of the house, both young and old, came one by one to kiss his giant hand, and comely maidens brought a bowl of water with which to bathe his giant weary feet. Torque had no chance to catch his breath before at least 150 giants entered to see the guest with their own eyes and chat. The cavern, which was deep and quite immense, before too long looked like a meeting place filled chock-a-block with these enormous brethren, and every time another giant entered, he greeted Torque with, "You are welcome here. 1,000 times, light of our eyes, most welcome." The questions, "Who are you?" and "What's your business?" were never raised by this great company, for that is not the way they manage things. Their custom is to honor guests 3 days before they set about to question him. And so they celebrated for 3 days and paid him all the honors of a guest. One brought him fish so fresh it still dripped water. Another walked in loaded down with game. Another had a few wild birds to offer, and yet another had a hen and cheese. And some brought cream or thickened cream and pastries. The whole community brought victuals for the feasts. They played sweet music on the lyre and the flute, to which the men and maidens danced and sang. The young ones fluttered round, the old just swayed, and Torque had never seen such love and joy displayed. Chapter 2. "When I've enjoyed such food and hospitality," the sated Torque now asked himself, "how can I then betray these gentle folk, or even worse, lay hands on one of them? Would Hakonush had asked for something else, then I shed a drop of folk for these folk's blood. It seems that love has power to make men do what brutal force could never lead them to. My force is something that I cannot hide, but may love always serve me as my guide. These people welcomed me with true affections, deep feelings, sacred salt, and sweet confections." Chapter 3. 4 days went by, and Torque poured out his heart, confessing to the giants all his woes. 4 days, beloved brethren, have gone by, and in this time I haven't said a word, and you've forborne to ask me why I wander down valley and up mountains as I do. You've shown me love and given me great joy, such hospitality as kings deserve. The Lord preserve you and your families too, in opulence and happiness, and may the Lord preserve your race and your descendants. A problem draws me now to your assembly, a dilemma that I must discuss with you. As you know, there lives in Uprit Castle a gentle, gracious, and most comely maid, whom I have chosen as my life's companion, but I cannot marry her without a contest. Now I am here, and fall down at your feet, and humbly ask you for advice and help. Skin me alive, and bury me at once, or let us all together make a plan to let me win this maiden without strife, that peace and bliss may mark our wedding day. When Torque had spoken thus, he let the old man speak. He called the other giant's children, and he said, "You must remember that in ancient tales, whenever one desired to win a woman, he had her kidnapped by the devs and taken to a dark and distant land or to the mountains. Then, like a gallant brave, he rescued her, winning her love, and soon became her husband. It's true, the dwarfish folk take pride and joy in winning wives by force and violence. But what pride could there be for mighty giants in winning brides with vulgar shows of strength? It is quite otherwise. If he could win her by love instead, then would a giant have abundant reason to feel pride and joy? I am in full agreement with our guest. He acts quite properly, this decent giant. Our Hey Kanush has not been carried off to darkness, and she has not been captured by the devs. She's free. She's mistress of her destiny. And living like a princess in her father's castle. So go to her then, in peace, and drunk with love, in happiness and joy with song and dance, and ask this stubborn maid to be your wife. She'll see there is no need for competition. I'll follow as fast as fired feet can take me, and speak the blessing upon your marriage vows. Take children, boys and girls, along with you, so they'll be ready to perform the marriage dance. The old man ceased to speak. The cavern roared. Yes, yes, let's go. The giants shouted with one voice. I don't agree, cried out one lonely voice, a giant who was leaning on a rock. The hand of Hey Kanush is sought by 20 giants. Each is more hideous and stronger than the next. Enormous monsters all from Dozoropor, who proud and straight roam every day and night throughout the dales and mountains of their land. They are just like the brutes, both coarse and stupid, and void of all human attributes. How can we make these idiots understand that they should yield if they can harm our children? For I am convinced that there will be a fight. Just trust me. Leave the children in my care, advised the old kind-hearted patriarch. I promise I'll keep them out of danger. No one will touch a single of their hairs. Today, we'll make our way to Upret Castle. We shall wait for you to come tomorrow. If you have listened to my plan and found it good, do nothing that would make the children fearful. When he had spoken, all the lively children rushed up and put their arms around the old man. Don't worry, Pappy. We have bows and arrows, and if you like, we'll all form into troops. We don't lack courage and are very strong. The old man, laughing, seemed himself a child as he gave the weapons to the unarmed children. To some went bows and arrows, and to others slings. To others still went daggers and stout lances. To one a rod, to another a club. The girls composed themselves into a band which played march music on their horns, flutes, trumpets, and drums. And so a children's army was assembled and looked to their old pappy for command. Let's go, my children. Ready? Forward, march, the old man ordered, like a general. All those great giants laughed both loud and clear when they beheld the army formed for all their children dear. Chapter 4. The children's army forged ahead. At noon they heard the news. The castle was in sight. They began to blow their flutes and beat their drums. All night the din continued, and Upret was shaken, as were all the dales and mountains. Their noise and voices shimmered the very fountains. Meanwhile, the 20 Dozoropo giants, before the day had dawned, surrounded Upret. Beneath the very castle walls they crouched, maintaining a short distance from each other, and lurked like mighty, terrifying beasts. Before long, Tork arrived, and at his side were 30 giants, all exceedingly strong. Tork, when he saw the Dozoropori giants, saluted them, but none returned his greetings. I greet you, brethren, Tork said once again, to see if, perchance, they could act like men. Again no answer, not a voice or a smile. It seemed they were not men, but speechless beasts. He spoke again. I am kin to Hey Kanush, and I have come today to choose her husband. If you are candidates for her fair hand, you must compete to win her now, inside. Each one in turn shall strive with an opponent. The victor shall be married to the maid. If you are willing, let us all go in and let the games for Hey Kanush begin. The Dozoropori giants all jumped up and rushed in like a herd of elephants. High up around the courtyard, all the guests were seated, while the wrestlers stayed below. Torque climbed the stairs and sat near Hey Kanush, explaining as he sat his plan as follows. Besides the guests who are assembled here, these 20 giants volunteered to come. Let them begin the games while we look on. When only one is left, I'll take him on. But let me first explain, the old man said, to make sure the wrestlers understand the rules for the competition. Then lack of sportsmanship won't spoil our day. He turned to them and said, you first must draw in order to decide who shall go first. The trumpets played a fanfare, long and loud, and energized the wrestlers tall and proud. And Hea Kanush sat at her courtyard window. The lovely prize of these champions strove to win. Each glimpse the would-be husbands caught of her increased their strength by double, even triple. The games began. Two hulks entered the ring like raging bulls or untamed buffaloes. They slowly walked around and sized each other up, and finally they grappled with each other, resembling nothing more than fighting bears. They were well matched in bravery and daring, while underneath their feet the courtyard thundered. Now both are struggling upright, now they're down. Now both their heads collide like mountain rams. They kneel, they stand, they oft-times they fall. But neither pins the others back to the ground. The sequel struggle lasted 3 full hours. The longer it went on, the warmer they both grew, grappling with each other's flesh with lion claws and tearing it with a pair of pincers. And then one tripped, it seemed by accident, and his opponent thought he was the victor. The fallen giant perked right up, however, and seized his foe, the momentary champion, raised him right up, and slammed him down again, a movement so sudden that was so abrupt his foe sank one full span into the earth. He was defeated, well and truly beaten, and left as breathless as a cold cadaver. 3 cheers now for the victor, cried the crowd, and praised the skill of this victorious wrestler in voices that resounded to the heavens. There were, however, others still to beat ere he could win the day and claim his prize. 19 of them. He could not beat all. In fact, he vanquished only the first 3. The 5th to fight put 4 grim giants down. The 10th defeated the remaining 10. Evag was this strong giant's given name. Now it was he whom Torque must put to shame. Chapter 5. Torque called Evag the giant to his side and said, you are victorious, my friend, and you deserve to win a goodly prize. But you have still to win another bout before you've won this princess as your wife. If you don't wish to take me on, just say, I promise you will still lead home a bride. Of all these other maidens, take your pick, and you and I will become related. And then, of course, you'll marry a Kanush and celebrate your marriage with a feast. Ah, no, I don't agree. We must contend. Yes, even if you prove to be the strongest, for, hey, Kanush, I am prepared to fall. I'd rather that than not to try at all. If I don't beat you, I will perish trying, because I couldn't live with a defeat. You're tired now. Perhaps you'd like to sit and rest a while and chat a little bit. I'll leave it up to you to choose the time our fight begins. I am at your disposal. The patriarch agreed. An excellent proposal. We shall postpone your fight until tomorrow. Both combatants agreed to this suggestion, and soon a lavish table was prepared. And all the giant guests sat down to feast. They ate, grew sated, felt such great delight, they soon forgot the pains of their late fight. The banquet over, the old patriarch called all together for some friendly games. They had great sport, exhibiting maneuvers that only giants can perform. It was terrific. Of all these giants, there was not one could equal Torque's success at any game. He gave such proof of his great strength and skill that none could beat him, singly or together. In one hand was a ball, a club in the other. He clasped one to his chest while pushing with the other. He leapfrogged over all opposing players. He seldom touched the ground with both feet. The undefeated Torque was at his best. Not one of them could find a way to stop a battering ram of such great size and speed. They made a valiant try to seize the ball. All 20 of the giants fell on him. Some sat upon his back, while others pinned his shoulders, and others still took strong hold of his legs. Undaunted, Torque reared like an elephant, and he ran through as though he were pursued by wasps. The Patriot, to give them all a chance, called Torque aside and pulled him from the games. "Come now, sit down," he said, and laughed out loud. "The others stand no chance if you compete." So Torque withdrew. But soon the games had ended. The Patriarch announced a new diversion. He sent for branches of the filbert tree and had some carried in for all the children. The boys and girls arranged themselves in groups and sat down on the ground surrounding Torque, and some of them had climbed into his lap. These Torque caressed and gave them loving taps. While he sang them a song in his sweet voice, they wove a crown out of the green filbert branches. "The purpose of this crown," the old man said, "is to reward the feats of good Evag." "I don't deserve it," was the giant's answer. "When mighty Torque is of the company, his force is stronger than the power of envy. Compared to him, our heroes are but boasters, and he has demonstrated in these games. He is not made of flesh, but carved from rock. Who knows if he is human or divine? In any case, we all bow down to him because he had no equal in these games." "I am amazed," the old man interjected, "to hear such cleverness from Dzopor." "I am not from Dzopor," replied Evag. "My village is the iron mine in Bog." "Ah, that explains it. Now, as Torque has said, you've but to say the word and you can wed whichever of these 20 maids you choose, and in the process you'll become Torque's brother." "That time has not yet come, but if Torque wishes, I gladly would become his humble servant." Torque was much moved. He bolted from his seat and kissed Evag upon his giant brow. "Brothers we are," said Torque, and patted his great shoulder, just as loving mother pats her child. The old man turned and said, "Now, hey, Canush." And as he spoke, his face was wreathed in smiles. "Do you insist on your condition still? Is it important that you keep your vow?" "I will obey whatever you require. I'll even fight with him if that is your desire. Indeed, I wish our law to be fulfilled. You must compete with him with arms of love. May your love henceforth be your only weapon, and may you love each other openly and much. You will be his protectress, he your guardian. That is the challenge of the wedded state." Before the old man, Torque and Hakonish knelt down as tenderly as little children. The old man took two crowns that had been woven and crowned the happy couple with his blessing. "Now, children, play upon your drums and horns. Let laughter dance on the valleys, the hills, and bourns." Chapter 7. A long narration such as this might end with three gold apples falling down from heaven. This tale, however, ends with another sort of envoy from a rather lofty place. Upon his steed, the mighty prince of Gugar rode up. He bore an edict from the king. He first unrolled the scroll to show them all, the royal signature affixed to it, then read the words by which the mighty ruler granted to Torque the powers of governor and put the western part of his domain under the jurisdiction of our Torque. Of course, the post was seen as a great honor, and Torque accepted it with modesty. The prince had brought fine gifts for Hakonush: gold necklaces and earrings, bracelets, rings, all set with diamonds and with precious stones. For Torque, the prince had brought some presents, too: fine winding cloths and coats of scarlet stuff, such as befitted his now high position, a huge black mantle made of sable skins, and 100 sacks of silver and of gold. For Hakonush, again, with purple veils, a royal sapphire ring and gems and trinkets. These gifts were sent by her to her by the queen herself. And from himself, the wealthy, generous prince outfitted Torque in handsome, rich apparel. The giant guests stood round, their mouths agape, and they beheld Torque showered with such honors. "Did I not tell you," said the good Evag, "that after mighty Torque the mold was broken?" The nuptial feast began anew in laughter, in great delight, in feasting, and in pleasure. The gold and silver sent by the good king buoyed up their spirits like a flood in spring. The end.